Seachtain, an Indo Askeilige.
Lower and Wanchirna Elner Donaldson Lish and Ifagachin Akanir Lower Jeffrey the Dinyerby.
Ni Heg Willem Policy Shachon, Ian Rodayana Univira Listad occur Leshnabaj Bogashoot.
Skilty, Fis, Turmi.
Nimajigiri in Dram Honyal Ama, Tamajigiri Munchain Honyalista.
Seachtain, find us on all the usual podcast platforms.
Yeah, having my head shoved into the steps of the Ulster Bank in Ranelagh, cold butt of a gun put into the back of your skull, that's a moment where you go, okay, yeah, I think this one's up.
How does a high-flying academic become one of Ireland's most prolific bank robbers?
What I would see as the most important part of this still lies open.
I'm Not Here to Hurt You, a brand new series from the award-winning team behind the Indo Daily.
That November day, that's where it all begins.
Out now, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an Irish independent podcast.
Autonomy is not legislated for on the Irish roads. It's kind of sitting on a minister's desk. There's a draft. You can't have level 3, for example, in Ireland, which is eyes off. In Germany, level 3 and certain roads and certain vehicles. So Mercedes, BMW as well, got the same on highways where you can have hands off, eyes off. They were able to prove that the technology adheres to local laws. Tesla doesn't have that, for example. So basically, you can't have unsupervised autonomous driving with a Tesla pretty much anywhere.
Hello and you're welcome to The Big Tech Show with me, Adrian Weckler. What's going on with autonomous or self-driving cars? What's going on with the technology behind it? And can it be used in other ways? Well, there's one person who knows better than anyone else in the country, and he's been on the podcast before, Barry Lunn, founder and CEO of Previsio, which is a Limerick-based company best known for its technology around autonomy. You're very welcome to the podcast again.
Hi, Adrian. Great to be here. Thanks.
And you've had some news recently, but before we get into that, let's just talk just for a second to remind people what the different levels of autonomy when it comes to vehicles are. There are levels, aren't there?
There's levels, yeah. And they were almost defined before anyone knew how hard it was to do. So it goes from like level 0 to level 5. I think we can all establish what level 0 is. And level 5 is basically that all vehicle is in charge all the time, completely autonomous in all scenarios. And then the ones in between, level 2 is, I think, what most consumers will be used to now, has kind of gotten into vehicles like famously Tesla Autopilot or BMW Drive Assist. And that's where in certain scenarios, you have to keep your eyes on, got to keep your hands on the wheel, but essentially the car is driving itself, but might not be able to switch lanes or things like that. So everyone kind of got stuck on level 2, I would say. And that's why the levels don't really make sense, because otherwise it would have been level 1, 2, and 2 would have been really long, and then level 3. We're starting to see now this move into level 3, which is where you've hands off, right? And that's basically Mercedes, Ford, in limited areas on the highway, essentially, you can take your hands off and the vehicle drives, but you still have to pay attention. And kind of level 4 is really where you don't have to pay attention. But again, it's in certain scenarios, right? And that's kind of how it's rolling out. And really what happened was the safety regulators got involved and suddenly everything had to slow down, because you can't just let cars go off and do what they like. So now it's becoming a little more nuanced, I would say.
So in terms of that nuance, so I saw Elon Musk tweeting the other day, for example, that Tesla is now offering what they call supervised FSD for $99 a month. Roughly speaking, what level do we think that is?
It's essentially moving towards level 3. By all definitions, it's level 2. But now it's moving more towards level 3. But when there's supervision in all scenarios, it's level 2. So you've a lot of automakers using expressions like level 2 plus now and things like this, and level 3 plus, which makes sense, right? Because it's a bit more than just the basics of level 2. But I would definitely say Tesla's starting to approach level 3, but they can't say that because they're now worried about the regulators are going to jump all over them. So they're basically saying, don't do some of the stupid stuff you did before.
Yeah, because I see people on X and on other social media platforms, actually mainly X, posting videos of themselves in Teslas that just are driving from the moment they get into the car, essentially they sit back and they film themselves doing 20-minute journeys somewhere. When we talk about level two and level three, you referred to when you're on a highway, you can take your hands off the wheel. But in terms of sitting into a car, turning it on, giving it directions and letting it take it from there with your hands off, is that kind of a level three, level four level?
Oh God, no, that's absolutely level four, level five.
Okay.
Like from place to place in all scenarios is level five, right? Like that's your proper taxi, like in Waymo. And by the way, it's a world of Waymo only.
Oh, okay. I mean, I was going to get onto that. But these videos essentially are people who are kind of, let's be diplomatic, they're skirting around the edges of regulation in what they're doing.
100%. And that's the danger of releasing software into a hardware platform that's not equipped to deal with that software. And what I mean by that is some Tesla models don't have, for example, eye watching technology that can see that you're paying attention, or don't have the ability to sense your hands on the wheel. So some of those, if you release the software that they have for their vehicles now that are better equipped, then you get dangerous scenarios. Or people just fool it, right? Like people will hang things off of the steering wheel and that to fool the system. But I mean, they're going against Tesla's T's and C's as well, right? Because I mean, Tesla have reined it all in as well. They want to make sure, like, no one wants to be regulated off the road. And if Tesla customers continue to kind of skirt the rules, as you mentioned, then they will be. So nobody really wants that.
What am I allowed to do under the law? Maybe it differs in the US to here.
Yeah, it does. And autonomy is not legislated for on the Irish roads. It's kind of sitting on a minister's desk. There's a draft. You can't have level three, for example, in Ireland, which is eyes off. In Germany, level three and certain roads and certain vehicles. So Mercedes, BMW as well, got the same on highways where you can have hands off, eyes off. They were able to prove that the technology adheres to local laws. Tesla doesn't have that, for example. So basically, you can't have unsupervised autonomous driving with a Tesla pretty much anywhere, right? And the US, similarly, it kind of came a bit slower, but it's now regulated for that as well.
So what would I be paying my $99 for then?
Well, pretty nifty software. You know, you're also paying to be, you know, the first guy to have it on the block.
Okay.
But in terms of actually improving your driving and lifestyle, not a whole pile, I would say. But listen, each to their own.
Yeah, so, and maybe I'm taking on personal responsibility if I decide to try and push that software to drive the car by itself against Tesla's T&Cs. And if I'm caught and if I'm prosecuted, then it's on me. Is that kind of the general understanding?
100%. So if you're driving on the highway in Germany in a BMW or a Mercedes that's level three certified and the car crashes, it's BMW and Mercedes take responsibility. Right. Okay. If you do the same thing with a Tesla, it's your problem. Right. And that's another big aspect. So you can see why level three is such a big transition, because you have to solve regulatory demands. You've got to solve insurance. Right. So now BMW and Mercedes have their underwriters taking on what used to be your personal insurance underwriting.
Of course, this is a rabbit hole we could go down, and we're not going to go down to it. But it is worth pointing out that if you're sitting there with your hands adjacent to the wheel, paying attention to everything that's going on, you might as well be driving it.
True. But where it is actually, like, level two is way safer than level zero, right? And absolutely, I'd agree. So I have BMW drive assist in my own vehicle, right? I have no affiliation with BMW. You know, it's just, that's the one I'm comfortable with. And that, so I would drive with the driving assist quite a lot with my hands on and my eyes on. And it is much, much safer, because we are all prone to distraction, especially when we're on the motorway from, you know, Limerick to Dublin, for example. You know, we've all been there where you actually forgot a whole section of the road. I don't remember coming through Nina or whatever. And so with level two, now there's two people here keeping an eye on the road, right? And that's really powerful, and it will keep you lane centered and it will do all of that. So I would say, if you take it from a safety perspective, and it does allow you to kind of relax. It's certainly, I know from driving my car versus driving my wife's, I much prefer driving to Dublin in my car. So it's a level of comfort, but it's certainly not autonomy, and it should never be called autonomy. It's an assistance.
We hear about Ireland being a great place as a test jurisdiction for things like drones, autonomous aircraft. Bobby Healy is always telling me that, you know, Ireland is really kind of at the forefront for that kind of innovation. What's it like for automation with vehicles?
Yeah, so it's emerging, right? I think what we're lucky here is that a number of major automakers and tier ones, the guys who supply the automakers, have kind of centered software and development centers in Ireland, right? So you've got the likes of General Motors, you've got the likes of Jaguar Land Rover, you've got the likes then of Valeo as a major tier one in Galway that have kind of set up these centers and analog devices, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a really good place that if you wanted to do something, and we now have a test bed in Shannon, look, that's where we're headquartered at the Future Mobility Campus, which is an incredible place to test vehicles, right? Because it's kind of a ground truth, which is what you have to test in the Shannon region. It's quite a controlled environment, and there's also test beds behind closed doors that you can test autonomous features and things like that. So I would say it's very much emerging, but a big advantage we do have, and I was with a customer of ours yesterday in Dublin who was visiting, and he mentioned to me about, he always thought I was joking when I would say about the number of seasons we get in one day, and then yesterday he got all of them in Dublin in one day. And he got it straight away, right? But we have a nice mix of highways, we have a nice mix of really crap roads with grass verges, and then we have the mix of weather. And those are the things, actually, if you're actually serious about solving the problem, they're the kind of things you have to solve for, right? The edge cases, as they call it in the industry. Yeah. The edge cases are why we crash as well, right? And I think Ireland has an awful lot of potential. And we do have that, you know, the advantage of being one step away almost from anyone at any point to, you know, try and get approval to do something that maybe you don't get in bigger countries.
But right? We're still waiting on the minister. Which minister is it, by the way, in the government who's yet to sign off on?
It does keep changing. I'm guessing it's sitting on Jack Chambers' desk now.
Right.
But it's a very good question. I actually don't know the answer to that, which is remiss of me. But yeah, I think that's who it's sitting on.
Provisio just announced a deal with a company called Murgon. What's that about?
Yeah, so Murgon are definitely Ireland's best kept automotive secret, right? And they're a tier one, so they supply the OEMs directly, right? The big automotive manufacturers. And they essentially supply almost everyone. Like, I think it's like almost 70% of all EVs produced in the world are basically using Murgon parts, right? So they're parts production company for automotive. We're a technology producer, right, in Provisio. So we've been, through Future Mobility Campus is like kind of how we met. We've been working with the guys for the last year or so in terms of defining how we could bring our technology into mass production. So in automotive, series production is million unit quantities, right? It is such a huge market. So we've partnered up with Murgon now to bring the first of what we call our research and industrial products to mass production. And those products primarily are focused on people doing, you know, robo-taxi and test bed scenarios in automotive, but also then in agriculture, in mining, those type of applications. And combined, those are pretty monstrous. Like if you take John Deere, for example, in the agricultural space, John Deere is bigger than half of the automotive manufacturers in the world in terms of units every year. So those are big markets. So that we've come together on that. It's really nice relationship. Obviously, we're going to have a big manufacturing facility here in Ireland, but they also have their across Asia and in Mexico and South Carolina. So basically anywhere there's a lot of vehicles being made, they have manufacturing facilities. So it's a really nice tier one relationship for us to develop.
And has Provisio's own focus, is it still more or less the same as it was a couple of years ago? Or has anything added to it? Has it shifted? Has it pivoted?
Not really. We were pretty good in the beginning where we were working in the autonomous space before we set up the company. So we were kind of able to predict where things were going to go. So we kind of set up the company on the assumption that autonomy would fail in terms of level 5 for everyone would fail and that everyone was talking through their hat. So that's kind of played out. So our business plan has kind of come true on that. You know, obviously you change little bits here and there as you go, but in terms of our mission, no, nothing has really changed. Obviously, we adapt to, you know, the market, right? And in terms of, we might have raised a hell of a lot more money if the markets weren't the way they are. But then you probably make more mistakes when you raise a hell of a lot more money, which we've seen. And we've also got to learn from maybe some of the mistakes of the LiDAR companies out there. So I think we've been lucky enough in this where we're kind of coming at the right time. A lot of guys went and did the wrong thing, and we get to come along behind them and be like, oh yeah, we knew that. But obviously you don't know everything, you know what I mean? So we're learning an awful lot from where other people went wrong. And actually, you know, what we just describe at Murgon, maybe in the back of my head would I have said we're going to be a massive tier one in 5 years? And probably little Napoleon in me probably might have thought that way, whereas I got to learn from watching a bunch of companies try and do that and fail to go, right, I need to partner like hell here. So I would definitely say that's one thing we've adopted in terms of, we're definitely pursuing more partnerships earlier probably than we would have anticipated. But I think that's actually a good thing. That'll get us to market that bit quicker. And look, the market in terms of automotive, you know, we see in EVs, things are a bit wavy, and we see, but we're kind of immune to that. You know, safety isn't stopping, which is good as well, right? Like, now that the cat's out of the bag and people realize, hey, you could do this safer and you could do that, you can't get the regulators to kind of get back in their box and go, you know, oh, we'll go back to the way it used to be where you guys told us what was safe. Now that's gone as well. So that kind of plays into our hand as well, you know, that kind of way. So I think, you know, quietly confident, Adrian.
Are you surprised at the cooling off in EVs?
No. And now, by that, doesn't mean I've shorted the EV companies, no. But I'm not surprised. Anything, as it becomes commoditized, the price drops, right? And, you know, as an early adopter, you take that on. You know what I mean? It's like, I think it's because cars are kind of the second most expensive thing we buy, right, as consumers, that's really why it's such a gut punch for people. But if you think about it, the people who bought the first iPhones, you know, they knew they were getting into, you know, they knew it was that the second one was going to come out and be cheaper.
Well, although to be fair with the first iPhones, I mean, I think the first iPhone cost $499. So when you buy an iPhone, you know, 15 Pro Max now, it's like $1,400. So the price went up. No, I didn't mean in terms of depreciation of the price, but I mean in terms of demand. It seems to have taken a bath in terms that the figures are down. For the first time ever, fewer electric cars are being sold.
Yeah, and look, let's call a spade, right? Like, they took away an awful lot of the incentives and didn't really invest enough in infrastructure, right? So I think those two things make a massive difference. But in terms of EVs going away, and obviously there's only a certain amount of early adopters, and now there's a bunch of people who are going, okay, let's see how this pans out. Because I don't know anyone that gets in an EV and goes, oh, well, this is an awful experience. Because it's not. I mean, they're much nicer to drive. And that now, the anxiety around charging infrastructure, and I always differentiate between range anxiety, because there's no such thing as range anxiety. If there's charging infrastructure everywhere, why would you have range anxiety?
Exactly.
But charging infrastructure anxiety is very real, right? And something you shouldn't really have to think about. That's on governments, and and listen, we all have to meet these targets. You know, it's not sustainable to be building ICE cars, right, in the long term. So I think it will bounce back. I'm terrible for going, talk to me in 10 years. You know what I mean? I don't have knee-jerk reactions. So I think in the rollout of EVs, I think this is probably a bit of a blip. But in the long term, I suspect it's only going to go one way. I think you drive an EV, right?
I certainly do. And I love it. I don't overall, despite taking a 17,000 euro depreciation in 14 months, and I'm not bitter about it, I don't regret buying it. I really don't. I did it for environmental reasons. I also gave up eating a lot of meat, not all meat, because I just couldn't do it because I like it too much, for environmental reasons. So I actually genuinely believe in the technology. But my God, we're making a Hames of the infrastructure. I mean, I don't know if you saw the story this week where Dublin City Council said that those charge arms, the ones that you can put in the front of your garden, which avoid you having to put a ramp on the footpath with the cable, it sort of, you know, fairly neatly puts the cable out of anybody's reach. They probably won't get planning permission, you know? That's where we're at.
Yeah, yeah. It just isn't thought out. And I think that's like a TRA is going on in Dublin at the minute. And there's a lot of those type of discussions. But it's the joined upness as well. Like, I've lived in other countries where it's not just about the car. It shouldn't just be about the car. Like, to be honest, if you live in a place in Dublin that it isn't even easy to put in a charging infrastructure, right, or to get planning for it, you probably shouldn't own a car. Well, you have public transport coming out your yazoo.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
One or the other. Give us magnificent public infrastructure with trams and buses and metros and everything, or give us infrastructure to charge our electric cars. But don't whinge that, you know, if people stop buying electric cars because they've nowhere to charge the things, and you won't allow them charge them if they lived on a terrace street.
Absolutely. And there was no joined up thinking on that. And in apartment blocks is another big problem. You know, you want people to live in apartments, but then they can't actually put in a charger in their apartment block. No one kind of taught us. But that's an Irish thing, right? You know, that's just, we do tend to try and solve the problems later, and we'll get there. And then, like you and me, everyone will love their EVs, right?
Yeah. Well, hopefully that day will come. Just before I let you go, what's next with the company? What are you looking forward to? What are you working on?
Yeah, so it's awful boring big boy stuff at the minute, right? Scale, just getting into production. We've got like loads of really, really cool partnerships coming together in terms of that from a tier one, tier two perspective that are building up nicely now at the minute. So that's it. It's an awful lot of that. The team's grown more internationally as well. We have a US presence now as well.
Yeah, you've been off in Detroit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that where the main decision makers still are in the American auto industry?
Well, listen, they're a bit everywhere, right? But what I like about Detroit is they're still there, and they were there 50 years ago and they're still there. Silicon Valley kind of comes and goes, right? And obviously we spend a bit of time there, but I do like Detroit and just the fact that it's consistency. And of course, obviously over in Washington, you've got a lot in Carolina and that. So it is quite spread out, but it is a good base. And we're in a really nice center there where we're set up.
I heard the city's making a comeback.
Oh, listen, what it's done in the last number of years compared to when I first started visiting there, I think it's incredible. And I love that, right? Like, I'm from Limerick, right? So I love Detroit. I like cities with a bit of an edge as well, right? And Detroit, just something smells right about Detroit. And they're doing it themselves as well. A bit like Limerick as well. You know what I mean? We were like, let the rest of the country run us down. We'll build the coolest city to live in. And I think that's what Detroit are doing. And it just, there's a really nice melting pot. I don't know if you've been, but it's just, it's a great place. And sport is a big thing.
As my listeners have never heard me say before, I've been to all 50 states, but I have not been to Detroit in Michigan. And I have a soft spot for Rust Belt Midwest cities, all the way from St. Louis, Kansas City, all the way up through, you know, Fargo and Minneapolis, Chicago, which where I have a lot of family. I'm going there in 10 days' time, but I really would like to get to Detroit. So I might get some tips off you another time for things to do in Detroit, other than visit, you know, M&M's birthplace. So Barry Lunn, founder and CEO of Provisio, always a pleasure to have you on. Congratulations on everything so far, and the best of luck for the future. That's Barry Lunn, founder and CEO, as I said, of Provisio. Gavin Hennessy was on sound. JJ Clark produced. And I'm Adrian Weckler. You've been listening to The Big Tech Show, and we'll talk to you soon.
An Irish Independent digital subscription doesn't just get you the news. It gets you the best of Ireland's stories all in one place. Whether it's the best of politics, business, sport, entertainment or lifestyle. Get it all for just €4 a month for 12 months when you first subscribe. Visit independent.ie/subscribe today. Irish Independent. Terms and conditions apply. Cancel anytime.